This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Rich Cioli Show Podcast.
So here's what happened. Last week, I got an email from the White House saying that we're going to do a radio row. Would you like to come? And I said, absolutely. They do these radio rows every now and then where they invite a number of radio people and TV people. And then they send in the ambassadors, the cabinet members, and all the other people to just do interviews. They just bounce around doing interviews. Would you like to come? I said, absolutely. The first time they did it, I was actually in Italy on a listener trip with our great friends there. So I missed the first one. Second one, I think I was in Alaska. So I said, yeah, of course I'll do this one. And I sent a note to my friend in the West Wing and I said, hey, I'm coming next week and hopefully I get the chance to see you. And he wrote back and said, yes, let's make it happen and I will help you with the interviews. Now, I didn't go in expecting to see the president. It's very difficult to get the president of the United States, even for just a few minutes when you're doing one of these things. And everybody wants him, obviously. You're bringing in journalists and talking heads and hosts from around the country. And everybody wants the president, obviously. I mean, I was looking, there were 135 TV and radio interviews yesterday from the White House. President did only two radio interviews, and I was one of them. But you think about that, right? 135 total TV and radio interviews all across the span of the six-hour portion of the day. And the president only gave two radio interviews and two TV interviews, and that was it. Right? So it's very, very tough to get him, and you got people flying in from all over the country. So I wasn't going in expecting. I thought, well, it might be nice if I get a chance to see him. That would be great. But obviously, that's just, you know, it's icing on the cake. We decided to go down the day before. So we left on Monday to go to go set up. So we went and met the wonderful people at the press office there in the White House who were just absolutely terrific. Roma Duravi is just outstanding. And she met us there. We got cleared through the Secret Service. We walked down the West Executive Lane of the White House and into the old Executive Office Building, or the Eisenhower Executive Office Building, as it's called, to set up for the radio row. Most of the people that work in the White House work in the OEOB because it's just bigger. They have more space there. And for security reasons, too, especially when you've got a cabinet meeting that same day, it's just a lot easier to have everybody there versus in the actual White House. The White House itself is, it's part mansion, it's part residence, it's part office building, it's part museum. It's many, many different things. But it doesn't have nearly the capacity to be able to have all the people that work for the president. So you've got the National Security Council, the Political Affairs Department, most of the press shop, all in the OEOB, as it's called. Speech writing's over there, a number of other places. So they set up on the fourth floor, and we set up, and we put the table down, and our draping of the banner of Talk Radio 1210 WPHD, the flags in the background looks beautiful. And Roma says to me, I need to speak with you offline. Now, at this point, it was just me and Greg and another radio host from, I forget where he's from, Connecticut, I think. She says, I need to talk to you offline at some point. I said, sure, no problem. So we're setting up, and we're almost done setting up. She grabs me. We walk down the hall to the Indian Treaty Room, as it's called. It's a beautiful, beautiful room. If you ever get a chance to go to the OEOB and see it, presidents have signed and have held many very historic ceremonies in that room. It's a ceremonial room used quite often. And yes, they still call it the Indian Treaty Room, which is amazing. So anyway, we go in there and she says to me, so I have some good news. Tomorrow, you're going to get an interview with the president. And I say, well, that's amazing. Thank you, Roma. That's outstanding. She said, it's only going to be about 5 minutes. Is that okay? And I said, yeah, of course. I'll take whatever I can get. She said, and we'd really like you to focus on the USMCA. The whole purpose of the radio row yesterday was the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. I said, of course, no problem. I'm happy to do that. I know trade is one of his signature issues. I'm happy to do that. Absolutely. Thank you for the honor. She said, I know that Greg will go with you. Is there anyone else you want to send? I said, well, Dawn's here too. Can Dawn come in? And she said, I'll see what I can do. They usually only want one person, but let me see what I can do. So, okay, no problem. She says, please don't mention this to anybody and don't even tease it that you're going to have an interview with the president. I said, okay, I won't. And she said, and for what it's worth, I was really happy when I heard it was you. Roma's a sweetheart. She's been in studio with me before. She used to work for Linda McMahon when she was the SBA director. So she came in studio once and I met her. It's just tops, right? I kept it on the down low, obviously, during the show. And you know that I've been dropping hints about my relationship with the president almost daily for the last, what, 2.5 years, I guess?
Subtly.
Subtle droppings. The truth is that very early on in 2015, I got a phone call from a friend of mine who said, he said, are you spoken for yet in 2016? meaning, you know, have you decided to sign on with a candidate? I said, no, I haven't. I said, I'm not, I'm doing the radio show now. I'm not doing full-time political stuff. He said, well, there's somebody that could use help, and I was hoping you'd come in and meet with him. And I said, okay, sure. You know, I'm always happy to do that for you. You're my friend. Happy to do that. He said, it's Trump. I said, great. So we set up a meeting at the Trump Tower there in New York on the 26th floor, and I went in, and he and I just hit it off right away. And it's funny, too, because before I went into his office, I met with his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Jared said, look, you know, he may not like you, but either way, what a cool experience, right, to go into his office and sit with him and talk with him. It'll be something you never forget. I said, absolutely. I'm excited to do it. So we set up a time that me, Jared, and Corey could go up there and meet at the time Mr. Trump. And he and I just hit it off. We hit it off, and he even invited me to fly in his plane to New Hampshire to go to a rally. And there's things that occurred after that, but I can't share because of confidentiality, and I just respect that. It's very important to me when somebody puts their trust in me that I don't violate it. But I was with him from that moment, which is really the summer of 2015, up until March of 2016, the last debate down in Miami when I was at Mar-a-Lago. You know this because Chris Christie wrote about it in his book when he outed me that I was down there doing debate prep with the president in Mar-a-Lago. And so at that point, then after March, there were no more debates for the primary. When he became the Republican nominee, at that point, the RNC took over. It was all new people. Bannon was there, Paul Manafort, Reince Priebus, Sean Spicer. It was a totally different world. And that was, they didn't really need me in the general election at that point. But I always kept in touch with them, and they were always enormously grateful and everything else. Now, I've never wanted to exploit that relationship in any way, shape, or form. It just was not something I wanted to do. I always figured that when the time was right, the president would come back on the show. He came on the show during the primary. He was on the show April, right before the Pennsylvania primary of 2016. And I've always kept in touch with them, and they've always been gracious about getting back to me and right away. And but I always felt it was important. I figured, well, when the time's right, you know, when the time's right. I have not seen the president since March of 2016, when we were down in Florida. I walked into the Oval Office yesterday. First of all, let me back up a second. So Roma told me that the interview was going to be in the Roosevelt Room of the White House. The Roosevelt Room is great. It's a beautiful room. It's very historic. And it makes sense because you don't want the media traipsing in and out of the Oval Office. That makes a lot of sense. So they set up a blue screen. They set up flags. Looked very, very nice. That's where the interviews are going to take place. So we're waiting in the West Wing lobby. Me, Greg, and Dawn waiting to go into the Roosevelt Room to do the interview with the president, all right? And we're just sitting there hanging out and that sort of thing and hanging out. It's funny, too, because when Kellyanne Conway was supposed to be on the show, I made a comment on the air like an old friend asked me to come down to the West Wing and see him.
Yeah.
I couldn't make that meeting because of the timing, but and then that old friend wound up going into the cabinet meeting, so I will have to go down there again to see him. But we're waiting to see the president and everything like this, and we go into the Roosevelt Room. President's wrapping up a TV interview we just did. And he goes, all right, who's next? And they go, and then all of a sudden, and guys, stop me if I'm exaggerating here, right? He stops, looks at me, face lights up and goes, oh, he's a great guy. He was with me from the beginning.
Yes.
Did he not say that?
He did.
He did.
And that's then nice. He said, he puts his arm around me, goes, let's go to the Oval Office.
Yes, he did.
And they said, are you sure, Mr. President? He goes, oh, absolutely. Let's go. Oh, this guy's with me. This guy's been with me since the escalator days.
Yep.
That's what he said. He goes, come on, let's go. It's hot out here anyway. So then we all go into the Oval Office. And that moment now, you ever like out of body experiences and surreal moments, right?
Oh,
so
man.
So he and I walk over to the Resolute desk together. And he goes, you were always there for me. You've always been there for me. He goes, I'm so glad you're here today. I said, do you remember what I know he didn't remember this. I said, do you remember what I said to you the first time I met you? He goes, no, what? I said, hi, Mr. Trump. I think you're going to be the next president of the United States, and I'm here to help. And then the press secretary, Stephanie Grisham, laughed, and Roma laughed, and he laughed, too. And he said, well, not many people thought we were going to win back then, did they? I said, no. I said, that's why this is a little surreal, sir, you know? And he sits down behind the Resolute desk. And you think about that desk, too, and you think about all the people that have sat behind it, you know? Today's the day that John F. Kennedy, President Kennedy, ended the Cuban Missile Embargo from that Resolute desk.
Yeah.
You know, the history of that is amazing. And so I put down what we have this low energy, outdated piece of technology garbage called a Marantz.
Oh, boy.
And I put it down on the Resolute desk. I stand next to the president and I'm holding the microphone.
All the bigwigs are listening now, you know. Oh,
This low energy, like we're a third rate, top 250 market, low energy radio station interviewing a county commissioner at a hog weighing contest.
It's a little old.
Only way it could have looked worse is if I put a walkie talkie or possibly my son's Fisher Price Walkman on the Resolute desk. And the whole time I'm just praying this thing doesn't die because it ate the batteries up during the day, right?
It did. Four new batteries in 6 hours, it was almost dead.
Here I am thinking, you know, the President of the United States, I'm in the Oval Office with him to interview him, and these batteries are going to die, and I'm going to miss this whole damn thing. Because we haven't updated our technology in this radio station since the 1947 War of the Worlds broadcast, and I'm thinking... So thank God the Marantz did not die, which is good. But I had to keep moving the microphone back and forth because it doesn't have the ability to record, you know, full spectrum because it was made in 1973. Nowadays, they have technology. You don't even have to have a microphone. It's amazing. But I had to hold the microphone, which was fun. In fact, afterward, when we took pictures, he said, well, put the microphone down so they can see the station.
He's a branding genius, honestly.
He
because
is.
He knew that you would want the radio station logo in the picture with you and him.
He goes, that is how you make a living, right? And I said, well, I literally said this to him. I go, well, I can't make it as a full-time debate coach for you. And he laughed. Because remember he was taking shots at the debate coach in that rally and people thought it was me?
Yeah, and you had to write to your friend.
I wrote my friend and made sure it wasn't me, and it wasn't me, and you know, but anyway. So after the interview ends, I stand next to him, and we take some pictures and everything. Then I go, Mr. President, I said, could my team come up and take some pictures with you too? He goes, oh, absolutely. Dawn comes up. He thought you looked beautiful, by the way. He mentioned that.
That was very nice of him.
Yes.
You took a picture with him and you introduced yourself. He introduced himself to you.
Yeah.
Suddenly I was out of the picture. And then even Stalker, the president goes, hey, come on up. Come on, take a picture.
Greg's
like, I'm good. I'm good. And I go, Stalker, it's the president of the United States. Yeah. Come up here and take a picture with the president. Now, this is the thing about this conversation with the president. I'm not going to lie to you and pretend like I'm going to put all of that history aside. I helped the man craft messages. I was very, very intimately involved with the campaign. I could not share that with the audience for confidentiality reasons during the election. I mean, but I have the ability to share some of it now. The point is that I'm not going to go in there and then pretend like suddenly I'm Mickey Rooney or Andy Rooney from 60 Minutes and try to grill the president. My job here is to talk with him and bring his ideas to you firsthand. That's my job. It's not to get you, to gotcha, to become the next Jim Acosta. And that's not who I am. I have a relationship with him. I have a history with him, which is why I was one of only two radio interviews he did the entire day yesterday. And by the way, he was running late. And there's a cabinet meeting. It's about to start. So the cabinet is in the cabinet room waiting to go. Now this is the other funny part of this story. I have been I've been a staff member, you know, for different politicians over the years. When you've got new people in there, they're always very leery of anybody who ever says they've worked on a campaign, right? Because, you know, I made an offhand comment to Roma, like, yeah, you know, I was back in the campaign in the early days. And I'm thinking in her mind, she's probably thinking, like, this guy licked envelopes, bumper stickers. Not that any of those jobs are not important, but everybody always has a story of how they were on the campaign, right? Somebody was on the campaign in this state or that state, so they've heard it a million times. They go, okay. When I walked into the Roosevelt room and the president lit up and said, oh, he's a great guy. He was with me from the beginning. I think they realized at that point I wasn't licking stamps in an office in Kalamazoo, Michigan, right?
We're not.
And then he tells them about how he went to the escalator thing, and then we brought up Mar-a-Lago and everything like this. So they were cool. But at that moment, I had to make a decision. They gave me 5 minutes with the president. And I know him, and I know that 5 minutes can easily become 50 minutes.
Yes.
Right? I had to make a call, and that call is, do I respect the wishes of his press team? And I said yes, because I have to, because I've been in their shoes before, and I know what it's like when a host goes rogue and doesn't respect their wishes because they're trying to keep the president on track. He's got the cabinet meeting waiting to happen.
I know what that's like too, by the way.
Right?
When a host goes rogue.
When a host goes rogue. Like what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, exactly.
You're supposed to play the interview at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. It's 8:09. Good I know. God.
I know, but you can't get this history anywhere else, right?
I agreed. 100%.
So I know that, you know, Dawn, and I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't know Stephanie Grisham, the new White House press secretary, but I want them to like me, and I want them to obviously let me do another interview with the president this year, because there's going to be a lot of interviews. So I said, I'm going to stop the interview on my own, because sure enough, about halfway through, Roma walks over and gives the sign to break. And the president shakes his hand at her.
He does.
Right?
He does.
Dawn, am I exaggerating that?
No. So I would have gone on.
I know, but I also know the job they have to do, which 100%. Is it's a difficult job to keep the president of the United States on track. And I said, I'd rather just wrap it up when they ask me to and then talk to him longer next time than make them mad because he talks to me for 30 minutes and then I never get an interview with him again, because guess what? They're always going to be the ones who schedule the interview.
Exactly. And this will be the only place that he will come in 2020.
Yeah.
I mean, this radio station, this radio show, the only place in town.
They even said to me, they go, will you come to the rallies and just interview him there? And I said, yeah, sure. So listen, corporate shills, I'm going to need parking reimbursement and mileage. And a piece of equipment that wasn't made by Thomas Edison himself. So you see, Dawn, when you're in that moment and you're in the Oval Office and the president's there and he's waving off his people, I've been that person. I've been that person before. And I just wanted to make their life easier. So I chose to end the interview when it ended at about 6 minutes or so. But I'm telling you, Dawn, am I exaggerating? This could have gone on.
It could have gone on. It could have. I mean, it was a very comfortable. I was amazed at how just warm he was and how comfortable it was. I'm not kidding you, because you don't know. Is somebody going to be intimidating or they're going to be looking at their watch going, oh, I'm in a hurry? Nothing like that. It was just, it was wonderful. I was surprised and I had butterflies, I have to admit. And I've interviewed a lot of people. I've obviously covered a lot of stories. It was a real pleasure to be part of that.
And Greg was nervous. You were nervous that I was going to go too long, right?
I was nervous.
He was nervous. He had a
about
headache.
A lot of things.
Nervous the batteries
the
batteries
were going to die. I was nervous about a lot of things. But standing in there was weird because I was just like, I'm like, oh, please don't go over because I want him to come back more in 2020. But you did fabulous.
Greg and Dawn are in the back of the Oval Office, and I'm literally standing next to the president. He's sitting at the Resolute desk. They took a lot of pictures. We'll get those pictures because afterward, he took the pictures with us. After the interview's over, there's a whole other story I need to share with what happens after the interview ends. But I'll do that. But right now, without further ado, my exclusive conversation, because that's what we're calling it, conversation with the President of the United States. All right, we're here in the Oval Office with the President of the United States, President Donald Trump. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Pennsylvania, obviously incredibly important for you. You won Pennsylvania. They said you couldn't do it, and you did. And you're going to win again, I believe. The USMCA, the trade deal, very, very critical to Pennsylvania jobs.
Well, it is, but I mean, beyond even USMCA, Pennsylvania is now having the best year they've ever had because of our policies. We have more jobs. We're helping the steel. We're helping the refineries. We're helping agriculture. Pennsylvania's had the best year they've ever had over the last couple of years since I'm president. And I love the state. I went to school in the state, as you know. I went to college there. I went to the Wharton School of Finance. And it's a great place. And I hear we're doing even better than we did on the day of the election. So I'm happy about that.
What do you think about it? There was a war on coal before he became president, a war on fossil fuels. All the Democrat candidates have said they want to end fracking, which is hugely important to Pennsylvania.
There was a war on everything. They had a war. They have a war on everything. They have a war on themselves. OK, these people, I think they're stone cold crazy, if you want to know the truth. But there's a war on everything. They're using impeachment for reasons that it was never intended. I just watched a little bit of the hearing. It's a joke what's going on. Everyone is just, they can't even believe it. They've politicized this to a level that it was never meant to be by the founders. And that'll be over soon, just like everything else. Don't forget, and you were with me from the beginning, and I won't forget it, but the fact is, you remember, this started long before the election. I mean, they've been after me from before the election. And Schiff gets up yesterday and he starts making a speech in, I guess, in California over the weekend, screaming about how he's going to take the president out. And now he's in charge of a committee where the Republicans have absolutely no rights, no due process, no witnesses, no lawyer, no nothing. It is a horrible thing happening. But here's the bottom line. We'll win. And Pennsylvania is going to win. We have things in, happening in Pennsylvania, as you know, with various plants opening up, auto plants, steel plants. Nobody's ever seen anything like it.
And you know, Mr. President, I talk to people all the time who say this impeachment thing is blowing up in their faces because they turn around and they go, why are you getting nothing done for us? The USMCA is a great example, right? They should have moved on it by now, but they won't move on it because all they care about is going after you.
Nancy Pelosi is incompetent. She has no idea what's going on. We're going to end up losing Mexico and Canada. They've been waiting for months. They call me. They say, sir, When is this going to happen? It's up to one person, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House. She doesn't want to put it up. She admits it's an incredible bill, replacing, by the way, the worst trade bill ever, which is NAFTA, where we lost thousands and thousands of companies and jobs, millions and millions of jobs. NAFTA was the worst. This is going to be one of the best trade deals, maybe the best trade deal ever made. We're going to lose it pretty soon because Mexico and Canada, they're waiting for many months. And she's playing probably politics, but she's basically incompetent. She hasn't done anything. She's Speaker of the House. She hasn't done a thing other than this phony impeachment. And I think it's going to blow up in her face. But this deal is ready to go. I mean, I'm concerned that if she holds it much longer, they're going to just say thank you very much. And they're going to just say, let's go back and let's just do our thing. That could happen.
Well, that's going to backfire then, Mr. President. The workers want to see results. I call her Batty Pelosi. I mean, you're the master of nicknames, but that's what I call her. I just think that she's losing it. And who would you love to run against the most? Who's your dream crazy candidate to run against the most?
Well, it's hard to believe out of 325 million people, that's the best they can do. I watched some of them this weekend with the pandering, with the begging. I've never seen anything like it. So, you know, you never know. I never want to talk too much because you still have an election to run and crazy things can happen in elections. Look how dirty they were with the filthy, dirty dossier that they produced on me. With all of the things that they've done, they're doing, they do books on me and they have nobody signing the books. That's all the same group that we have right now. I don't even call it deep state. I call it bad people. I see it, you know, people testifying. I see people going over and testifying. And these are just a lot of bad people. But we have a lot of good people, too. Fortunately, they more than surmount the bad ones. But USMCA is something that should be approved immediately. If it's not approved immediately, Mexico, Canada, they're going to say goodbye, sayonara. We appreciate it. And it's such an incredible deal for us. And you know, look, they picketed when the deal was made. They picketed in those countries because they weren't so happy with the deal. Nancy Pelosi is going to blow one of the greatest deals ever made.
Mr. President, I'm grateful you said I was with you from the beginning. It was my honor to be with you from the beginning. There are a lot of Never Trumpers, though, and I think that they're angry that you want to bring the troops home. They're angry that you don't want to start any new wars. I mean, that's who's turning on you, as I see it, sir.
Well, they're even angry when I got al-Baghdadi. I mean, they couldn't believe it. I got al-Baghdadi, who's the number one terrorist in the world. I mean, the founder of ISIS. He's trying to rebuild ISIS because I was the one that knocked out 100% of the caliphate when I took over 3 years ago. The caliphate was all over the place, and I knocked it out. Then I knock him out, and they made him into a religious leader, the front page of the Washington Post. They made him into a great, wonderful religious leader as opposed to what he is, which is a horrible terrorist, the number one. But you look at that, and even the deep staters. You know, the deep staters, in a certain way, the never-Trumpers, I find, are almost worse than the Obama and Clinton people. Never-Trumpers are, there's something about them. They're out of business. There aren't too many of them left. They're on the respirator, as I say. But the Never Trumpers are really, these are people that if you took with all the judges, you know, I'll be up to 182 judges very soon. That's federal judges, Court of Appeals, District Court, and two Supreme Court judges. And we rebuilt our military. We got rid of the individual mandate and Obamacare. We're going for things that nobody's ever done before. We're protecting our Second Amendment. You do all of these things, and you say John Smith is the president. All of these never-Trumpers would say he's the greatest president that ever lived. But with my name on it, I still have to fight. But that's okay, because you've been with me from the beginning, and I will never forget it.
Mr. President, it's my honor, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
God bless you, bud. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you.
All right. So at that moment, I said, I'm going to wrap this up because we can keep going here. But his team needed to get him to the cabinet meeting. So that was the tough call I made. I'm glad I made it, though, in hindsight, because they will always be the ones who book the interviews. But I thought that was cool how he said that. You've been with me from the beginning and I'll never forget it. That's the way he is, by the way. It's the way he is. And for all those health conspiracy nuts out there, I can tell you he looks as good as he did back in March of 2016 in Florida. He recognized me right away. He remembered me right away. He remembered the stuff we did right away. And now I have to tell you part two of the story, because the interview actually didn't really end, per se. It just kind of went off the record and kept going. So I'm going to tell you about that in just a second.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
So remember, they only gave me 5 minutes with him, and we went over, and they asked me to just talk about the trade deal, and we talked about, obviously, a bunch of other things, right? So so then the interview ends, and then he starts talking again. He goes, well, Rich, how are we going to do in Pennsylvania? And I start telling him about Pennsylvania. Then he goes, you know, I endorse these governors. And the one guy, he starts telling me how the one guy, I'm not going to mention his name, really low, and the president going up, and he got involved, and then his poll numbers went up, and the president goes, this is off the record, but he starts going off about the guy, right?
He did.
And his people are like getting nervous, you know what I mean? Then the president goes, well, let's take pictures, we take pictures. Then he goes, he turns to me, he says it again, he goes, you've been with me since the beginning, come with me. We walk into the president's private study behind the Oval Office. Now, at this moment, it already feels surreal, but now it feels like I'm still in my hotel room, kind of asleep. You know what I mean?
Dreaming.
We go into the president's private study behind the Oval Office. This is probably something that maybe like 1% of the world ever gets to ever see, or 1% of the people ever get to see in the entire history of the Republic. We go in there. And it's a small little room. There's all these blue boxes in there. The president starts handing us stuff. He hands me this big blue box. He goes, here. And he hands me two little blue boxes. And he turns and he looks at Dawn, who's standing there, because I brought Dawn and Greg with me. And he looks at Dawn. At this point, he pulls the big blue box out of my hands, ripped it out of my arms like a baby ripped from her mother's arms at the southern border, ripped out of my arms, and hands it to Dawn, right?
He handed it to me.
And then he goes, here, take these. And he gives you these the little blue boxes. Stop. Right? Am I exaggerating?
No.
Then he shows us his private dining room. Then we go back into the Oval. And now at this point, the press secretary, I can sense her anxiety here.
Oh.
I can sense the anxiety. Because he's in no rush.
Oh, he's...
he's in no rush. Sits back down at the Resolute desk and starts talking to me again. Right?
Mind you, there's a cabinet meeting waiting for
There's a cabinet meeting waiting. And he had already waved them off once, so they're not going to try to pull us out because, I mean, they understand at this point now my relationship with him, which, again, I've never tried to capitalize on. I've never tried to shove it in their faces, the White House staff, the campaign people, ever. I never did that, right? I just figured I would just bide my time. But at that moment, they get it. They understand that this is a guy who's very special to the president, and they're not now going to try to do anything other than just let him take his time with us in the Oval Office. So at this point, then, I decide... we've got to get out of the Oval Office. Like, we've got to leave, right? By the way, is any of this an exaggeration, Dawn?
No, I think because Roma, you know, they kept like trying to get us out. And he said at that one point, please stay. And they said, no, come here. And he took us back. So that was pretty cool.
Just incredibly gracious, right?
That's what I will say that, you know, the media, you know, says a lot of things. But being there personally with him, first of all, the questions about his health or neurological allegations, which are crazy after you're spending time with him, you know, just very warm, extremely warm, extremely gracious and welcoming and very respectful of his staff. Not that he was disrespecting anybody, but he genuinely enjoyed seeing you again. And I think he just really enjoyed the moment and is a good-hearted person. He wanted to, you know, give a gift, which is so good-hearted. So I was just really struck
by that. Well, I gave a gift, and he took it away from me. Gave it to you. By the way, what was in that box? Tell everybody what was in that box.
It's a circular, it's a gorgeous pewter plate with the presidential seal etched in the middle of it. And then it's like 8 by 10, you know, 8 by 8 inches, let's say, or 10 by 10, like a platter, and then his signature laser etched into the plate. It's gorgeous. Yeah.
So what I got in the two little boxes, I got one was it was very beautiful, pewter,
nice,
like candy dish, and the other one was some silver thing. I'll probably sell on eBay or something.
Yeah, no,
I'm not going to sell it on eBay. I won't do that.
They're gorgeous.
Mine
is in my china cabinet on a stand.
Oh, it's, imagine.
The boys wanted to take it to school. They're like, we're telling everybody, you know, they wanted to, obviously, you're not taking it to school.
So the president says, he compliments Dawn on how attractive she looks.
And then he
goes, can I say that? I don't know if I can say that anymore. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, in this era.
And he turns to the press secretary, says, Stephanie, can I say that? I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. I go, well, you're allowed to say it, Mr. President. You just made her day. And Dawn says,
yes. I said, no, thank you very much. You made my day. You made my week.
So I love that he took a shot at the political correctness. Then we start trying to walk out of the Oval Office. And he says to me as we're leaving, So how are we going to do it in Pennsylvania?
He does.
So I walk back to the Resolute desk.
No, they're like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so I walk back to the Resolute desk, and I start talking about it. I go, sir, listen. I go, here's the deal. You know, the number's here, the number's there. I said, well, you know, you come in and they're like this. He goes, because I'll tell you what. He goes, then he starts talking again. I'm like, I got to go. They're never going to let me back here. They're never going to let me back. So we wound up leaving the Oval Office, and it was just amazing. He could not have been more gracious and friendly. And as we're leaving, he says to them, he goes, make sure they get their pictures, right?
Yes, he did.
Make sure they get their pictures. Yeah. And then as I'm leaving, he goes, I'll never forget it. You were there with me from day one. Like just reminding those staff members they weren't. You see, that's the other thing, too, is like reminding them kind of like, you know, just pointing out.
Oh, boy.
There were only a handful of us back then. There were like literally four of us. So anyway, it was an amazing, amazing day. And thank you for indulging me on that story. I have so many other stories I could tell. But for time's sake, I'll take a breath and say good morning to Dawn. Let's get some very, 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 very quick headlines.
Yes. Good morning. Dawn Stensland here. It's 43 degrees. Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Zioli Show News brought to you by Exergen. Two federal corrections officers, prison guards, charged with falsifying records in relation to disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein's apparent suicide at a Manhattan jail. This happened in August. And President Donald Trump actually says those false media reports speculating about his health that Zioli talked about actually frightened the First Lady, Melania, when she first heard about it. Obviously, they figured it out and talked. But first, imagine hearing those social media reports about your husband having chest pains. It was all fake news, according to the president's doctor and so on. The FOP blasting Philadelphia Eagle Malcolm Jenkins after he bashed police and their union. It all started with an op-ed in which Jenkins, who turns 32 next month, advises Mayor Kenney Philadelphia needs a new police commish who fights back against the police union. So McNesby, he went off, but he said Malcolm Jenkins, is tackling crime when he can't even manage to tackle his own opponents. He goes on, but I'm doing headlines here to get through this. So eyewitness weather today, 51 degrees, partly sunny. Exergen, is your family ready for cold and flu season? Knowing when it's the flu really lets you know when to call your doc. The flu brings a fever. Be prepared with a thermometer you can trust. The Exergen temporal scanner, backed by more than 80 clinical studies. I'm Dawn, Zioli Show News.
Thank you, Dawn. Appreciate that. And I'll say this quickly, and then I'll be done here. So after we left the Oval Office, we're in the West Wing. We walk outside. And at this point now, we're outside. We go to the press briefing room. That's when I stood behind the podium and did all that stuff. And Roma said, so Greg and Dawn go back to the OEOB to get all of our stuff. And they were so gracious to do that and let me stay and hang out in the West Wing because I was still waiting to see my friend who was in the cabinet meeting. So I hung out in the press briefing room for a little while and listened to the media just whine about how much they hate him. It was amazing. They were all whining about him. They all left. They went into the cabinet room. He did a quick little gaggle with them, and he said a couple of things. And they were able to upload it quickly because their technology wasn't made in 1932. So people were able to hear what the president said right away. But they were all whining about him. You know, let me guess he said this. Let me guess he said that. And I just started laughing. I'm thinking about this. Because you see Pebble Beach, as they call it, all of the press people along the side. There's Jim Acosta, not in handcuffs, not in chains, just free to walk around. And all these people, and they're doing their stand-ups, they're doing their live shots and everything like this. And it occurred to me, he's probably one of the most accessible presidents the media's ever had. But they're all taking their shots, like, why do they even use this room anymore? There's no briefings. It's like, he gives you briefings. He gives you his own briefings. You're like, he calls you in the cabinet room, and he starts commenting and talking about things. Anyway, my friend was in the cabinet meeting. I didn't want to stay around too long, so I'll be going back very, very soon back to the White House. But unbelievable day, absolutely just a remarkable day. And, if you've ever doubted, I'm telling you that, and I've always said this too, you know, part of the reason why I feel at times when I do disagree with the president, I make it known is because he wants that. That's what he wants. That's what he expects. By the way, if you care about his success, he expects that. He needs that. It's like anything else in life, right? You want someone to succeed, you help them succeed. That's very important to him. The other thing I'll tell you is that he values loyalty, as do I, which is why I've never written a tell-all book. I never will write a tell-all book. I'm not going to become like the mooch. By the way, I lasted longer as press secretary than the mooch did.
It's true.
You know?
It's true.
That's right.
Dawn, behind that podium, I was there longer than the mooch.
I was taking the pictures. You definitely were. You know, we should also thank... really the Zioli Show Army, because the president's staff was looking at all the tweets and all the social media. And they just said, wow, look at this.
Loyal following.
Yeah. Look at, and they were really sharing that with the president and their staff. And so that was joyful, too, to have our friends with the Zioli Show now being introduced to the president and his staff. It was really a great moment.
Yeah, Dawn brought up the Zioli Army to the president. She goes, she goes, it's the fastest growing show in talk radio
in, America,
in the country.
Which is true. It's the fastest showing a morning show of its kind in the nation right now. That is absolutely true.
Oh, yeah. I left that part out of the conversation, too.
Yes.
Then he starts asking about the ratings.
The ratings.
So I tell him, I go, Mr. Right. President, it's huge. We've had a 475% increase in the ratings from this time last year. He goes, wow. And I said, well, and with women, 25-54, our numbers are this. He goes, that's remarkable. I mean, he was genuinely impressed, right?
He was impressed, but also he likes to hear stories about people's business success, too.
Yeah.
And so that's part of who he is. So,
so they did comment. Jessica Ditto, who's with the White House, she said to me, your audience is amazing. She goes, I've never seen anything like this with a local show.
That's true.
I say local because we're not nationally syndicated yet, but I say local for that purpose. But I know there's people that listen all over the country, and thank you for that. And you are a friend of the show so much. But she goes, I've never seen such a passionate and engaged listeners. And I said, well, it's the Zioli Army. I said, it's way more than just an audience. You know, it's something very, very special, a special friendship from day one. So that's what I mean. It says, I value that so much and to prove to you how much I value it. It's why you're never going to see a tell-all book. I'm not going to sell out to be on CNN and MSNBC like the mooks going, the same guy that I worked for now suddenly can't be the president. You know what I mean? I can't respect that. I just can't. It's not right. But bottom line is, it's not right. So anyway, that is the adventure. There's other things to tell too, but
long have you been waiting to tell that 2015 story? Like I've been with you since 2015, and I've known that this has been eating at you to tell this story.
I mean, the best thing is that the day that I went down to Mar-a-Lago was my birthday. It was March 10th of 2016, and Greg goes, can I say something? I go, no, you can't say anything. I did the show from Miami. So Greg was just tweeting out that something very big. And then we just kept making comments like, you know, well, when I signed up with him, it was the summer of 2015. Nobody really thought he was going to win. Like five of us in the whole country. So it's a very, very small group is my point.
Yeah.
But anyway, I have been waiting, to share all that, among other stories I can share. But
4 years is
building up. Anyway, so the president will be back, and we'll have longer interviews together, and we will see each other again, and you will be part of the action. I'm going to give you a front row seat to his reelection. You're going to get that. Okay, that's my promise to you. 855-839-1210. All right, we're so over time.
Hey, thank you. I really want to say thank you because that's you. You know, you made you. I shouldn't have gone with. You know what
of
I mean?
Of course, you should have gone with.
Well, I mean, you know what? But thank you. It was great.
And you just believed in me when nobody else did. You and Greg.
That's true.
So there you go. You see. No, it wouldn't have been the same without you guys there. And obviously, he gave you the bigger plate for a reason.
I know. Zioli in his mind was thinking, why did I take her?
He's not bitter at all.
All right. Now I feel like the press secretary right now. Like, we got to wrap. We got to wrap this up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.